This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the fire.
Welcome to the fire, boys. My name is Parker McDonald.
And I'm Walter Lee, and we'll be your hosts on this episode of the Southern Collective Hunting Podcast. If you're a new hunter trying to learn the basics,
or you're a veteran woodsman just trying to get through your workday, there's always a place at our campfire for you.
Speaking of the fire, we would love it if you guys would join our growing Patreon community and be a part of the best and only digital deer camp south of Mason-Dixon Line.
Come on. If you'd like to learn more, click on the link in the show notes. But for now, Walt,
welcome to the fire.
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of the Live from the Fire series. Today we're going to be covering two successful hunts on opening day here in Tennessee. The first hunt was with a friend of mine's son. His name is Teague. He'll turn 9 next month. This was his first turkey hunt and ended up getting his first turkey. And then we'll also go over my midday hunt later on that day where I found a lonely midday gobbler. So we'll start out with Teague's hunt. We get to our spot about 30 minutes, 45 minutes before sunrise, just start gobbling. It didn't take us long to hear some gobbles. We heard several, it sounded like several birds. There were at least four or five birds that ended up being in this group. They were gobbling out past the end of this field on this ridge that we were on. And there were hardwoods on past it for about another 300-something yards. And so we slipped down. Tried to stay in as much cover as we could, and we got down to the end of the field, close to where those turkeys were, and got set up. We had a Jake decoy with us. I brought a decoy, you know, because we're hunting with a kid, and you just never know how still a kid's gonna sit. So the decoys really help out in that situation. Gives the turkey something else to look at and focus their attention on instead of a little fidgeting kid. But got everything set up and got Teague set up. I had him a little turkey lounge chair or whatever, the little beach chairs, if you guys know what I'm talking about. And he was using my little 28 gauge. And so I got him all squared away and started calling to these birds. And they were just fired up on their own. I mean, they probably would have done the exact same thing that they did if I hadn't have made a peep. But, you know, it's always fun to call it goblin turkeys. They pitched down, came up to the edge of the field in the timber, and wouldn't commit to the inside the field. They stayed out of range for a good while. And it was at that point, they were just acting real boogery. I was confident that they probably had seen us come in and set up from where they were roosting, or they probably saw us, you know, fidget around on the ground there. Like I said, this was Teague's first turkey hunt, and he had no idea how well turkeys can see. So I tried to keep reminding him to sit still and everything like that. You know, I never got frustrated with him. I was just patient because I just, you know, knew what the expectations needed to be going into this thing. But we got a lot of goblin around us. We got a lot of it on film, so that was really cool. Like I said, there were about four or five toms in this one group by themselves. No hens, no jakes that I saw or heard. And at one point, they were probably 30 yards away from us, behind us, over our left shoulder, and goblin, you know, shaking the ground, everything else. So we got a very good experience there with goblin spitting and drumming, you know, the whole thing. Just birds were just real boogery and wouldn't come any closer, wouldn't get around to the decoy. They just knew, you know, they knew something was up. Even if they hadn't seen us come in and set up, they knew something was going on around there. And so at one point, these turkeys are way off to our left, probably like 40 yards. And at one point, I asked Teague, I asked him, how quick can you turn around and maybe get a shot off? You know, Teague's been deer hunting before, and he's grown up in a hunting family a little bit, just never turkey hunted. And so I was gonna see if he could make a move and see if we could get a shot off there. But he eased around and got his gun up, and at that point the turkeys had kind of started just walking off, which was really good, actually. Not that they walked off, but that they didn't run or fly off. So we didn't bump them that hard, even though they had seen us and had probably watched us just literally all morning. They just eased off and they kept gobbling, you know, on their way out. And they went down in this holler off to our left and back behind us. And they kept gobbling. So they just knew something was up with us, but didn't really perceive us as too big of a threat, I guess. So they just eased off and went down in this holler. And it was at that point I said, you know, let's just get set up again, maybe on this other side of the field facing the holler where they went off into, and we'll try to call them back to us. It may take a little while. We'll just be patient, but we'll sit here and we'll just see what happens. So we get up, get the decoy, and kind of get resituated across the field and start calling again. And the original group of turkeys down in that holler, they're still gobbling. They keep gobbling. And at one point, it sounds like they are maybe coming a little bit closer. It was hard to tell, though. They were way down in there. There's a big, steep holler right there. And so as we're working these birds, several minutes later, I hear another gobbler down the ridge from us, less than 200 yards, you know, between 1 and 150 yards. And he was gobbling pretty good too. I don't know if he just heard us calling to the original group of gobblers and got fired up or what, but he came on down the ridge and he came in gobbling, and he covered a lot of distance in a hurry. I caught a lot of stuff on camera with a 360, and then I was also filming on my phone, so we got some really good goblin footage and some good audio. And so this bird, I mean, he just marched right down the ridge and kept gobbling. And once he got to the edge of the timber, I could see the top of his fan. His fan was gorgeous. He had those beige tips on the top of his fan, and so when he went to strutting, I mean, you could see that half moon shape right through the trees. He was just a big, gorgeous bird. And when he got to the edge of the field, he got to where he could see the decoy, and the decoy basically took over at that point. You know, when they see the decoys start picking up the work for you. and he marched right into the field. Teague had his gun. It was like halfway up, halfway in his lap. You know, that I don't know what kind of position really to call that, but I told him, I said, just be patient. You know, I'm confident this turkey's going to march up in here to the decoy and make a circle around him. And when he turns his back to us and strut, then you can get your gun up and get a bead on him, and we can get a shot off here in a minute. And that's exactly what he did. He did really well. He sat still. That turkey was probably 20 yards away. And he came up to the decoy, circled around between us and the decoy, and turned his back to us for several seconds. And at that point, Teague, you know, got his gun up on his knee, looked down the red dot, and got ready. And the turkey kept making a circle around to the other side of the decoy. And when he cleared the right side of the decoy, I called to him and had him stick his head up a little bit. And at that point, I told Teague to shoot, and he just nails his turkey. He made an excellent shot. I didn't see any pellets in any of the meat when we were dressing him, so he held it. I think he put the dot like right on his head and sent it, and it nailed him. I couldn't have been more proud of him. He was pretty tickled to death, but I think I was way more excited than he was, just because of, you know, that's who I am, and that's that was Teague's first turkey hunt, so he just hadn't been bit by it yet, but he had such a good time. His mom was super proud of him. You know, we FaceTimed her and got back to his house. I dressed it for him, and they got the meat all squared away, and I got the van. I'm going to put it in borax for him, the beard and the spurs. Saved his gizzard stones and the shotgun shell hole. You know, just got as many trophies off that thing as I could for him to show off in his room. So he was super tickled. And I think later on, a couple days later, his mom was saying that he was talking about when he was asking when he could go again. So that's encouraging. Hopefully we made another turkey hunter that day. And we made a turkey hunter organically, you know, just by taking him, and just not from somebody just watching something on a screen and deciding to go. I mean, we took a kid turkey hunt, and they enjoyed it. So that was super cool. I love being a part of anybody's turkey hunt. I don't care if you're 9 years old or 20-something, 30-something. If you've killed 100 turkeys in your life, if you've never killed a turkey, I just enjoy being there. And I love to see somebody be successful in the turkey woods. So it always just tickles me to death when somebody asks me to either take their kid hunting or to take them hunting, you know, just accompany them and share the woods with me. It's super humbling to me. It's, I don't know, it's such a big compliment. And I don't care whether I take a gun or not. But all that is to say that I was so glad to be able to tote a gun myself once I got Teague dropped off. He had to go play ball games. He's into, you know, baseball and everything like that. So he had to go play ball games for the rest of the day after his successful turkey hunt. So that was a pretty good day for him. And I got to take over the gun and head out myself, and went back to the same spot because, like I said before, there were a group of four or five gobblers plus the one that we killed. And then actually, I forgot to tell you all this. After we got done taking pictures with Teague's bird and was on our way back to the truck, another one gobbled on that same ridge. And so we got set up again. And since, it, you know, Teague had done killed his bird, so it was my turn anyway. We got set up again and called to this bird. And this bird came in gobbling really well. But he skirted around and stayed out of range. We just weren't set up probably exactly right, and we didn't really have time to pick out the perfect spot because that bird was coming and he was close. So once we got set up, started calling to him, and he came in, he just skirted around our position and stayed out of range and went on gobbling. And the direction that he left is going to be important for my story. So this bird goes off and leaves. And then we pick up Teague's bird and go on. And I've already told you all that. But I returned to that that same area later that day. This is like 10:25, I think, is when I get there. And I only know it's 10:25 because I was walking in and I was trying to film hunts, you know, this weekend. So I actually made an honest effort to do so. And so I was talking into the camera or whatever, and the timestamp said 10:25. So I walked into this spot at 10:25. Walked in, I got probably about 100 yards from the spot where we had killed Teague's bird, and I called, didn't hear anything. I walked about another 100 yards, really close to where we killed that bird that morning, called again, and struck a bird. He sounded like he was way off, I thought he was like 500 or 600 yards away. And then I walked down the little finger ridge towards the direction that I heard this gobble, and I probably didn't walk another 50 yards, and I called again, and bird gobbled, and it sounded, you know, 200 yards closer than the other one, which makes me think that, I don't know, maybe the bird was just turned around behind something, whatever, and I think he just sounded so much further away that first time than the second time. And as soon as I heard that bird gobble that close, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking that it's that same bird that skirted us after we killed Teague's bird. And, I mean, there's no way to confirm it, but it wasn't that long, you know, after we had killed that bird. And so it very well could have been. I'm more confident than not that it was the same bird. But anyway, that bird starts gobbling, and I cut him off. He gobbles again, and I just get this bird real torqued up as much as I can, because y'all have heard us talk about it before. Just the more I can get that bird gobbling in search of me and to get a reaction from me, the odds of you killing that bird just go up tremendously. You know, that's what I think makes that bird come looking for you. More so than you calling to that bird, making him gobble. He expects you to come to him then. And I think you just turn the tables when they start gobbling at you. And that's exactly what happened with this bird. I was on this little finger coming off a main ridge. The finger was probably, I don't know, maybe 100 yards long and probably 50 yards wide, kind of in the middle of it. So it wasn't very big. And I set up on the right side of that finger facing the point of the ridge. So I was in shotgun range if he had come up the point of the ridge, which originally I thought he was going to do. Because from where that bird was gobbling, it made sense for him. He was on the tip of another finger ridge across this big holler. And right across from the little finger ridge I was on was another little finger ridge, and then off to my right was another finger ridge on the opposite side. So there were two finger ridges on the opposite side of this holler, and he was on the one on the right. It made sense to me for him to just dump off the point of that ridge he was on, come down the main holler, and come up the point of my little ridge. I thought that was the easiest path of travel for him. It wasn't that steep. He could go down the little creek bottom and just jump right up here, and that'd be it. That's how I planned it out in my head, and it did not go as planned. It was still very exciting, but it didn't go as planned. So the bird's gobbling on his little finger ridge across the holler, and I don't know how many times he gobbled. I'll probably go back and look at the video, and I should count how many gobbles, you know, in that amount of time. But he gobbled, I don't know, several times, you know, within the span of the video, which was, I think, about 12 minutes. So he was gobbling really, really well. And the good thing about that was, you know, he was gobbling enough to, you know, let me know his position and kind of adjust accordingly. But he dropped down off that finger ridge, dropped down off the point of it, and he came straight up the side of the main ridge off to my right. And so there's another like little holler between, you know, me and this other part of the main ridge, this little draw off of this finger ridge. He came up that, kept gobbling, and he worked his way around the edge of that other ridge towards me. And this time of year, that I mean, it's starting to green up, so it's not wide open woods like it would be in early season. So there is starting to get a little bit of green on the trees. And there was a, I remember I couldn't see the entire face of that ridge that he was walking across, but there was a hole in the foliage. I don't know how big it was. It was big enough that I could see probably 5 or 6 yards across this little spot on the opposite side of this ridge. And at one point, I could hear him walking because, you know, the ground's littered with leaves. It sounded like potato chips, you know, when he was walking through there. So I could hear him walking really well. And he actually came across that little hole in the foliage, and I saw him walking across that ridge. He was walking towards me, but he was just kind of taking the long way around. And so I don't know if he got up there because he wanted to come in the other way and try to get up there and see my position before he kind of committed to it, which maybe, you know, that's probably exactly what it was. The route he took, he could see that position from further away. But anyway, he came across that ridge, he kept gobbling, and then he dumped down into the bottom of that little holler, that little drainage or whatever you want to call it, between me and this other part of the main ridge. And at that point, he was behind me to my right, you know, on my weak side, you know, I shoot right-handed. And I am facing the point of this ridge. So he gobbled about my, let's just call it my 4 to 5 o'clock, way down in this holler. And I knew, or I thought, I had to get on the other side of this tree because in my mind he was going to come straight up that side back behind me. And the way I was facing, there was no way I was going to be able to get a shot. So I circle around to my left. I circle around the left side of the tree, and I start facing, you know, down in this holler off to my right, off to, would have been my right a little bit, and expecting him to come right up there from the way he gobbled. Well, he must have come back down that drainage, and at that point, from my original position, he was probably my 3 o'clock from where he was gobbling. And so at that point, I thought he was going to kind of side hill the little finger ridge I was on and then pop up, you know, farther down towards the end of this ridge. And when I turned back around to my original position, I get the camera moved and everything else. As soon as I get like almost situated and get my gun pointed down towards the end of the ridge, I just ease my head off to my right, and I see his head. I see everything from about 2 inches below his wattles, so I saw like 2 inches worth of feathers, and then the rest of his head. And he just made me. I mean, he'd seen me turn around, but I guess he thought that he was hidden pretty well because he didn't booger right away. And so I guess he thought that I didn't see him. But I just eased my gun around and I got the bead on him and I fired. And went down there and claimed him. But it was, that was such an exciting hunt in that, you know, he just kept gobbling. He did exactly what a lonely midday gobbler is supposed to do. He covered probably 300-something yards. I think I looked at it on a map later, the way a crow flies. He was 300-something yards away. And he covered that distance in way less than 30 minutes. And remember, I told y'all I'd walked into this place at 10:25, and I'd killed him right at 11 or 11:05 or so. So he came in a hurry, and I remember when I saw him through that hole in the brush when he was coming across the other side of the ridge. I mean, he was just marching, and he just never let up. He may have stopped to gobble, and he just gobbled the whole way in. And thankfully he did, because if he had gone silent and had come up where he did finally come up and see my position, I probably would have never even seen him if he had not gobbled and kind of let me know where he was at. Now, look, I may have been able to, you know, hear him in the leaves and adjust then, but still, just the fact that he gobbled so much. He gobbled as much as like a Rio would almost out here in the West. He just gobbled very frequently, and that allowed me, you know, just to keep tabs on him. And looking back, you know, hindsight's always 20/20, and I always kind of, you know, reevaluate the hunt and look at the map and shoulda, woulda, coulda the thing to death, or the situation, or the hunt to death. I should have set up on the left side of that little finger ridge instead of the right side. And I don't really know why I set up on that right side. I guess because I thought that he would come up the point of that ridge and then walk around in the almost the same path that he went down that ridge earlier in the day, if this was the same gobbler. And so I wanted to be able to see the point of the ridge and be able to swing to my left for a shot if need be, if he popped up a little bit over there off to the left, which is what I originally thought. He'd just come up the point of that ridge, but you know, of course, hindsight, I probably should have set up more towards the left side of that ridge, facing across it. I could have faced almost directly across it, or even set kind of like in the middle between, you know, the point of that ridge and the main ridge. I could have sat halfway between there on that left side, and I almost could have shot that entire ridge if he come up there. That was, you know, that's probably best case scenario, because he would have come up over the roll of the edge of that ridge, and I still would have killed him. I still could have killed him at like 40 yards. Or he could have come up the point. That would have been about a 40-yard shot. And if he come up out of the head of the drainage towards that main ridge and went across the base of the main ridge, or the base of the finger ridge down the main ridge, I probably could have killed him. It might have been a little bit further poke, but I probably could have killed him. So that was hindsight, but it just ended up working out that he slipped in there, and I just saw his head and was able to adjust and get a shot off. But he was a good bird. I didn't weigh him. I think Teague's bird earlier that day was bigger. But my bird had a pretty good beard on him. Teague's bird was 19 pounds, 9.5-inch beard, and 1-inch spurs. I don't know if mine felt as heavy as Teague's. My beard might have been a little bit bigger. But, I mean, I'm not worried about that stuff. He didn't have any, like, big giant hooks on him. I think his spurs were about an inch. But it was an absolutely fantastic hunt. And the weather for opening day was the perfect turkey hunt weather that you draw up in your mind. You know, high 30s, low 40s, clear as a bell, no wind. Birds were just roaring all morning long. It was picture perfect. You couldn't have asked for a better Tennessee opener. And a lot of birds died in Tennessee that day. I checked the harvest report. There was like 7,000 turkeys that died that Saturday. It was a bunch. But anyway, yeah, that's the two successful hunts in one day in one spot. Where I set up and killed that bird was probably 15 to 20 yards away from where we killed Teague's bird, or where we set up to kill Teague's bird. So it's a good area. It's always had birds forever. Killed a lot of birds out of it, and I got one more tag left in Tennessee, and I won't be hunting in Tennessee until I get back from Oklahoma. So hopefully we luck up, get a Rio in Oklahoma, and then we come back, hunt Tennessee a little bit, and then Jacob and I are headed to Montana the first weekend of May. So we've got the got a busy spring, but it's going to be fun. So good luck to everybody out there. Be sure and enjoy this springtime, and get as many birds as you can. I'll talk to you next time.